everyone, to another episode of the Noisecast. As always, I am your host. This is Alberto, wishing you well from the work-from-home bunker, as it were. You know, life has changed, and we're adapting to it. And to help us talk through some of the challenges of working from home, we have a founder and CEO of Backup Assist with us this evening, Mr. Linus Chang. Linus, thank you for joining us. Say hello to the listeners.
Hi, everyone. It's a delight to be on. Thank you for having me, Alberto.
We are very, very delighted to have you with us. And it's no secret, the world is not the same place it was 8 months ago. Life has changed in some ways for the better, in some ways maybe not so much. And with it, there's been quite a number of challenges that everyone has now had to face. Before we get into it, let's talk a little bit about Backup Assist and who you are and what you do.
Sure, great. So at Backup Assist, we help organizations become cyber resilient. And what I mean by that is being able to pick yourself up after you've suffered a cyber event, something that may knock out your IT infrastructure, for example. How do you recover from that and get running again? So we make the software that powers the process to do backups and recoveries. And I think it's a great topic to talk about now, because with the work from home changes that have happened in the last 6 months, the landscape for making yourself resilient to being punched in the face with a cyber event, that landscape has changed dramatically. So I'm glad you mentioned work from home earlier on.
So, you know, you mentioned, cyber resilience and the reality of cyber threats, as we've, for the most part, most companies and organizations have moved to some form of remote work. One of the things that we always talk about, and one of the things that we constantly see, especially in the tech media, is another big company was breached. Another company was hacked. People's user information was leaked onto the dark web. You know, it's something that I don't think a lot of small to medium-sized businesses really ever considered prior to, you know, these global shutdowns. What are some of the challenges that you have seen or that your customers have come to you in hope of finding solutions for?
Yeah, that is a really great question. So absolutely correct. The small and medium end of town, they don't typically have a budget specifically for cybersecurity. They have a budget for IT in general. So the emphasis for a SME is generally more about productivity. With the changes with work from home, imagine this. 6 months ago, no one anticipated this, and a lot of companies were not set up for remote work. So in that last 6 months, you've had a very short period of time. Actually, it was probably the first 2 months where all the IT admins were instructed to say, get our infrastructure ready so people can work from home. So then you'll be installing new hardware, you'll be putting in new systems for remote desktoping. And think about it this way. If you start opening up rules in your firewall to allow remote desktop, if a legitimate home worker can get to the network, there may well be configuration holes, mistakes made that also allow hackers to get in. So we've had a very short period of time where we've had to make big changes to the IT infrastructure. And in general, we haven't had a lot of time to go and test that against vulnerabilities. So the SME in that mad rush to stay productive has almost by definition increased the risk of hacking and all those breach attempts that you mentioned before.
Right. And so, you know, obviously, you know, I think you really nailed it when, and speaking as someone who has consulted for small and medium-sized businesses for, and it's always been their IT budget, not a dedicated cybersecurity, cyber resilience budget. You know, how have companies, tackled the dual problem of plugging those security holes, but also doing it on a budget. That's really the million-dollar question, right? Like, if you can figure that out, you have a business.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess in the overall scheme of cybersecurity, there's so many things to consider. You know, you've got firewalling, you've got anti-malware, you've got mail filtering, user education, and of course, backup and disaster recovery. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Now, if you're a small business, if you're not specifically an IT administrator, but you go and start a business, who's in charge of the IT? You are, right? So then it's quite a steep learning curve for someone who's not necessarily a professional IT administrator to go and learn what all these things are that you have to do or that you should be doing. So backup is kind of like the insurance policy for everything. It more or less says, look, there are so many ways that you can be attacked from a cyber perspective. It's almost impossible to defend every single way. And even large enterprises have shown this because they regularly get breached. They regularly have to pay ransoms. And like you say, private data gets leaked. So knowing that it's virtually impossible to protect all of the ways, you know, to protect all of the vulnerabilities that a hacker can use, then what can you do? Well, the most effective way then is to back up your data and do it in a way that enables you to recover after you've suffered one of these incidents.
Right. Now, from my perspective and having to relay that to someone who may not be the most tech-savvy individual at an organization, but they make the decisions, is that almost like going in and saying, it's not a matter of if you will be breached, it's a matter of when you'll be breached? Is that really the best way to approach it? Is that the right mindset, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I actually think it is. Now, we have to look at things from a practical business point of view because this is essentially an exercise in risk management and risk mitigation. So when we start looking at it, let's not look at it from the technology. Let's look at it from the business viewpoint. So you can start asking questions and say, If my internet connection went down, what would be the ramifications of that? Would business grind to a halt or can we still continue to run? Now, what if it's not the internet? What if we suffer a hacking attack and data gets stolen? Again, am I in breach of any legal frameworks that dictate how I must protect the privacy? Do I have to notify any authority to say that data was breached? Is this going to affect my company's reputation? So that's another question you can ask. A third question might be, what if a hacker breaks in and installs ransomware and then holds my data to ransom and they're now demanding $50,000 of Bitcoin? What is the impact on the business? Can I, and some organizations may well be able to do this, can I just say, I'm not paying the ransom, I don't need that data, and my business can continue? For other businesses, they would grind to a halt and they might be losing $50,000 per day in lost productivity. So it's by going through this thought process of risk assessment, then you can actually figure out how what is the plan if these things occur. Now, the challenge is that it's kind of, we get caught up in running the business in trying to make, look, it's hard enough just to turn a profit nowadays with the lockdowns. And of course, most of our attention is on the business side and it can be forgotten that we actually depend on this IT infrastructure and these are some of the risk management exercises that we have to go through.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that's what it is. You're 100% on the ball with that. looking at, I guess, infrastructure in general, it's one of the things where you have to ask the questions, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, if something were to happen, it's almost like, you know, almost like a generation ago, it can your business operate without a phone line? Right. Like, it, you know,
the old pen and paper days. Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, I've worked in the construction industry for a number of years. And I can tell you that, you know, in the last 10 years, many of these places were still operating very much on a paper and pencil, you know, format. And this is a time where everything has been kind of put on its head. And you've had to adopt seemingly overnight, and maybe for some places even overnight. I guess what are some of the ways, I guess, that you can mitigate some of that anxiety, I guess, right? Because it's no, like, one of the toughest things about risk management is accounting for the unknown unknowns, right? So, you know, what are some of the tactics that you found to be helpful in those situations?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's talk about some of the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. So how about we briefly chat about that, and then we can lead into, you know, what can we do about it? So one of the things I find interesting is, if you think about this from a risk point of view, with a distributed workforce and work from home, we are now actually depending a lot. The business dependency has grown, and in the way that businesses are now depending on the stability of home internet connections, they're depending on, a lot of employees will bring their own device. So now they're depending on the fact that all of your employees have reliable laptops. And do your home computers have anti-malware software installed? We're now depending on the home-grade firewalls. Okay, think about it this way. If you're a work-from-home person, is it easier for a hacker to break into your domestic network, or is it easier to break into a corporate network? Now, companies may be spending thousands of dollars on very secure firewalls, whereas you've got the firewall that came bundled with your home internet connection from your ISP. There's almost a it's a very unfair comparison, isn't it? Because now businesses are depending on this low-cost hardware. So also connected to your home network are probably IoT devices. So if you have a smart fridge or a smart TV or a smart security surveillance camera, and a lot of these devices have vulnerabilities. So if you look at it, what used to be a known known, as in let's say an SME does have IT administrators, they know what's on their network. In general, okay, they know. They can have policies to say no one can bring a laptop or a phone in and connect it to the corporate network. Maybe they get a special guest Wi-Fi area instead. So they can in some ways control their corporate infrastructure. So I'd say that's the known known. And then they say, okay, if people bring their own devices, we can let them connect to somewhere else. We don't know what people are going to bring, but we'll quarantine and put them on a separate guest network anyway. So that's kind of like a known unknown. That can be controlled. Now, businesses are dependent on home users and work from home users' networks and devices. That's the great unknown unknown. Like, I don't know how many vulnerable IP cameras are on your network. I don't know. And it's almost impossible for a business to know, especially if you've got any decent number of workers. Now, how do we then solve the problem of being cyber resilient? And you have to assume that a breach is inevitable. So going back to one of your earlier questions, is that the correct way to look at things? You have to assume that the breach is going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if. So if that breach happens, then how do I protect myself? So there are a number of things that can be done. First of all, is that you have to know where your data is stored. Now, is it stored centrally or is it stored decentrally? When I say centrally, it could be a cloud service, for example. Perhaps it's Office 365 or G Suite, or it could be stored on an on-premise server that you use a remote desktop. Now, if the data is stored centrally, then it's possible to obviously back that up and protect that in traditional ways. If the data is stored decentrally, then you might have a problem on your hands because instead of one central place for all your data, now you've got dozens, hundreds of fragmented places where people store data on their own hard drives. And that's where it's about education and enforcing some sort of policy to tell all your work from home workers that you must save data in a certain place or you must back up that work from home machine.
Right, right. It sounds like, as times get tough, your compliance policy has to, rise to that challenge, right?
Oh, it is so much harder now. Imagine if there's data that's protected by HIPAA or some sort of privacy legislation, GDPR, for example, and you have to protect the identities of your client base. But in a work from home environment, it's so easy to just download, you might be working on a spreadsheet and to work on it faster, you just download it to your local computer and work on it locally. But that spreadsheet contains names and addresses of your clients. So now, instead of just protecting one copy of the data, you've got two copies of the data to protect, and you've got what in all likelihood is a lower grade of security on that home machine. So it is, it's like an exponential increase in complexity on how to protect and secure all of that data.
Right, right. I just kind of want to interject for a second and really stress that, difficult shouldn't be confused for impossible, right? Like, we know that it would be impossible to dictate every single thing that would be on an individual's home network, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it would be impossible to create policies and workflows that would allow for some management and mitigation of risk, right? Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's definitely fair to say. The constraints are, of course, budget and time. So now that we know work from home is going to be a thing that is going to last well beyond the pandemic, so we might have another 12, 18 months of the pandemic. But beyond that, work from home is, a lot of people have found it's a luxury in situations not to have to drive an hour to and from work every day. So work from home is likely to stay. Now, with that in mind, we can then start planning for it instead of having to do a mad rush to get everyone working from home. Now we can plan a work from home 2.0 that's going to be more secure. And it comes back to trying to bring as much of those unknown unknowns back into the circle of known unknowns and known knowns. And so, for example, a very good thing is simply not to depend on employees' home computers, other than to use it as a remote desktop into a computer that's provided by the company. So in that situation, the IT admin can set up a remote desktop machine. The IT admin can set up the policies to say where the data is stored, how it's used, and how it's backed up. And then, because we have time to go back and, let's say, increase the level of security and resilience for the infrastructure, over time, these vulnerabilities should dissipate and go away.
Yeah. That's the thing I think everyone is, I don't want to say they're holding their breath and waiting for it, but I want to say that's the goal of every like IT admin, security or information officer, if you're lucky enough to have one. I think that's ultimately the goal, right? We want to get to, if we could, we all would like to fast forward past work from home 1.0 or like what I called work from home beta. Yeah. into a more better defined situation. So when it comes to recovery, data recovery, what are the options that are available right now?
Yeah. Well, that all depends if you have a backup or if you don't. And it actually surprises me that people are still not aware of the importance of having a backup. So let's say that you unfortunately don't have a backup. Well, data recovery then goes back to some sort of exercise in taking your hardware, taking your hard drives or your SSD, going to a forensic data recovery place and then trying to get them to read the memory chips or the disk platters directly. So these are the services that were really popular in the days of hard drives when hard drives would crash. And you need to try to extract the data straight off the magnetic media or off the memory chips. Very expensive, and you're not guaranteed to get anything back. You know, it's really the luck of the draw. Now, if you do have a backup, then obviously you would just simply do a recovery from the backup. And there are a number of different types of recoveries, whether you're getting a specific piece of data or whether you're actually recovering the entire system. So there's considerations with that. But I did want to mention for your listeners, having a backup, there is a good way to do it and there's a not so good way to do it. The backup really needs to be, it's not just one backup. Okay, the more copies of data you have, the more secure you are, because you need to find one copy of your data that you can recover from. So if you have only one copy of your data as a backup, and let's say that's on the hard drive, but that hard drive gets stolen, well, then really you don't have a backup anymore. And the problem with a lot of people's backup strategy is that they only keep one copy of the data on a separate location. And what a hacker can do is come in, break into the network, install ransomware, and encrypt the backups. So now you've got zero recovery points. So the trick to having a robust backup strategy is to have multiple backups in multiple locations on multiple devices and preferably at multiple points in time. So it's like, okay, instead of just having one egg in one basket, I've got multiple eggs in multiple baskets, and I can go to any of those eggs and recover my data.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the misconceptions about, I guess, proper data backup is, well, you know, we set up a RAID server and it automatically pulls all this information, you know, once a night, you know, and we should be good. And I think that's one of the pitfalls that a lot of especially small organizations fall into, the assumption that, or worse yet, that their time machine backup is sufficient.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Because like every backup solves some problem to some degree, but not all problems. And it's actually those gaps that catch people out. So the idea of having a time machine backup, I do that myself, right? It's a great system. The Mac backs itself up automatically and I don't have to think about it. Fantastic. So let's take a look at the flaws in this system. First of all, I don't go and check to make sure that the backup actually happened. I mean, how many times do we go click in the time machine icon and actually read when the last backup happened?
Yeah, no.
So it could have broken. I could have changed my networking config, right? And all of a sudden it can't see the time machine server and it broke, right? So lack of vigilance and lack of monitoring is a big problem. But the other problem is that it's because it's an online system, it is vulnerable to attack. So if my administrator password gets compromised and someone can join the network, go in and delete those time machine backups, simply format the device, and then all my backups are gone. Then, you know, that's typically the technique that hackers use to monetize their exploit. When they break into a network, they'll try to find the backups, delete them, and then install ransomware and force you to pay a ransom. So, you know, time machine backups are great in that they're so convenient, and in the happy case where I'm only protecting against accidental data loss, like I deleted a file a week ago, I can go back to the time machine and get it back. Fantastic. But it doesn't protect against everything. You know, it doesn't protect against theft of the device, or it doesn't protect against a fire in your premises. It doesn't protect against hacking on your network. So that's where, when I said that the best backup strategy is actually about having multiple copies of the data, because when you do that, you start to protect against all these different events, and you hope that should any one of those events occur, you still have a valid backup to go back to.
In the spirit of what we're talking about, but kind of switching gears a little bit, I am a stickler for ensuring that at all times that we are compliant, right? You know, why is data, I guess not only data fidelity, but data recovery is such an important part of the compliance picture. I know you mentioned it from the point of view in the event that you are compromised, that you may have to disclose information. What's the difference between having a plan and not having a plan from the compliance standpoint?
Probably the ability to recover from event and bankruptcy, I'd say that would be.
That's a simple answer, right? But it's one of those things where I think people sometimes do not fully recognize how important that piece is.
Yeah, that's right. Let's start with a business scenario. Let's say you're a service provider, you handle data, and your business depends on being up and running, right? Downtime means lost productivity, and worse still, it could mean that you're in breach of your contracts to your clients. And if you're in breach, depending on the legal contract, the nature of it, there may be consequential losses, or there may be penalties applied that your clients can then go after you, right? Because your service is down. So let's say you run your service, everything's happy, and then an employee, you know, does something wrong, they click on the wrong attachment, or then home network has a security breach, which then enables a hacker to jump over to your network and install ransomware. And you're down because, you know, the ransom is too high, you can't afford to pay it, and you're down. So, you know, you could be in breach of contracts to your clients. You could be in breach of legislation such as GDPR, right? Because at that stage, you don't know what the hacker has done. You don't necessarily know if they've stolen data or not. You then have to notify the authorities to say you've had a breach. This could lead to reputational damage as well. So now you've got a problem with your clients. You've got a problem with the authorities. You've got a problem in that you've got a bad reputation in the marketplace. It's going to hit the news headlines. And that's where I said that, yeah, I mean, the worst case is that you have to close the business and you cannot recover from that. And for many small business owners, that is a personal liability. It is something that we, when we start our business, we take out a business loan, we put up collateral. You know, the consequences are very severe. But no one ever thinks about it because, you know, we have so many problems on our plate.
Just add to that, I think, like you mentioned before, if you're a small business, you are the IT guy, but it doesn't necessarily mean that IT is your business. And I guess that distinction is also kind of where education kind of plays in too, right? It's just like if you open up a bar, you know you need a liquor license in your city or your state or your province. It's the same idea with data, right? It would be smart to know ahead of time what you would be responsible for, what exactly is on the line should something go sideways.
Absolutely. And I do see it as a rudimentary requirement nowadays to have that plan in place. I can see if you were to get business insurance or cyber insurance, it's a checkbox that you have to have thought about it. You have to have that plan in place. Otherwise, either you'll be uninsurable or the premiums will be so high it wouldn't be feasible to purchase that insurance. So I think that's one way in which this level of foresight, if I could say, foresight and planning, I think that's one way to strongly incentivize that. And, you know, as a small business owner, it is not easy. We have so many things to think about, like you say, compliance with the law, even just running your business, employee HR law, let alone turning a profit. So cyber is yet another thing to have to think about.
So obviously, you know, I think it's safe to say that generally speaking, most people are looking for either one of four things, if not all four things, but essentially people are looking for something that's manageable, meaning easy, right? Like, you know, they're looking for something that is affordable. Like, that's probably number one on the list. And I guess the other option would be just how to manage it if you don't have access to an IT staff. I know Backupsys just announced a new product. Can you just talk a little bit about that product and how it can help people check off some of those boxes? Specifically, can you manage your company's data from anywhere in the world?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually have a new product, like you say, and what that product tries to do is make it easy for the SME to become cyber resilient by performing backups that are local as well as in the cloud simultaneously, and then to provide multiple ways to recover both the entire system and also granular pieces of data to a particular point in time. This product is aimed at the SME, so typically it would be an IT administrator that goes and installs and uses that product. But essentially what it tries to do is give you enterprise-grade resilience at a cost point that's friendly for the smaller organization. Yeah, and that may be a business like your dental firm or an accounting firm, or even we have a lot of clients who are schools, universities, and local government departments, even police stations, for example.
I was going to say, like, I would imagine, especially now, schools and whether they be larger school districts or individual schools themselves would be very interested, or rather would be a prime target for cyber criminals at this point, right? There's a lot of information that they collect. I know here locally in New York City, you know, that can be anything from, you know, names and addresses to social security number, tax IDs, you know, and that's basically, that's the honeypot, right? If you're looking to, you know, steal someone's identity or hold information for ransom, that's basically the three things that you would target.
Yeah, that's right. There are sort of two modes that these cyber criminals operate in. You've got your mass market attacks where everything is a numbers game, and then you've got your targeted attack. And certainly when you look at what they do with the targeted attacks, they're obviously attacking the people with money, right? The organizations with money. And what schools have the money? Well, it's going to be the privately funded schools, right? The well-funded schools where reputation is everything. And unfortunately, that does make them an appealing target for this kind of nefarious activity.
Sure, sure. You mentioned that, and I instantly said, right now, there's definitely a need there, especially as, you know, people are going back to school here in the U.S. I often wonder, you know, are they taking data resiliency seriously enough?
No, absolutely. And it is kind of the same problem that everyone faces, that the core business of a school is education, right? Educating the students. And you would think that, therefore, you would need to spend most of your money to achieve that. That is the teachers, you know, training, the facilities. So it makes sense, right? That's their business. And yet they have to allocate a certain other percentage of their budget for cyber and all of the security that is required there. Everyone's working within a limited budget, and we have to do the very best we can with that limited budget. And that's actually been our mission. Is instead of looking at how can we deliver the best solution, it's how can we deliver the best solution within a specific limited budget. So many of the things that we're looking at nowadays is how do we get a fully automated backup system running that's unattended, so it doesn't depend on anyone swapping out a backup disk or a backup tape in the old days. That's typically what people used to do. How can we use the cloud to achieve an extra layer of redundancy for the backup? But also, how do we then secure that copy of the data? And how do we try to make sure the backups don't get infected by ransomware? Yeah, is it possible to shield a backup from getting attacked by either a hacker or malware? So these are the sorts of, I guess, constraints that we have to work in. And it's quite an engineering challenge to come up with a solution that is both effective and affordable.
Right. I imagine there's a sweet spot, and it's very difficult to get to that. Works great, does everything it needs to do, can do it with as little human interaction as possible, but also is not going to break the bank. If I had to say the number one question I get asked when I have to, you know, make a recommendation, even at my place of work, it's always, how much is this going to cost?
Absolutely.
And I can guarantee you, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. You know, it could be the best of the best, but if the answer is it's not in the budget, chances are that it will not be up for consideration. I imagine that's the exact problem that you guys are trying to tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the cyber budget has to get divided into so many slices. You've got to have your network security. You've got to have user education. You've got to have filtering of emails. And backup and DR is just one slice. So if your slice grows bigger, right, because the backup and DR solution is too expensive, that means you're sacrificing on something else. And that's not going to be helpful for the organization. So knowing that situation, that it's very difficult to try to slice off, to try to reduce the budget in this area, because you know that it's like trying to cut off the leg of a chair. If you shorten one leg, the chair's not going to sit up straight, right?
Right, right. Yeah, that's actually a really great analogy, right? And I feel a lot of well-meaning organizations are shaving off, chunks of legs and then wondering why it wobbles.
Exactly, yeah. And then you get hit with a whopping, dirty, great big ransom, and then you realize, I should have spent the money up front.
I guess it's human nature, right? You look at a price tag and you say, well, we've been okay without it. A lot of people, unfortunately, will not see the need until they see that final price tag, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And people do get attacked multiple times because you're a known easy target then. And very sadly, people do have to go out of business.
Well, Linus, if you don't mind, could you just give me your 11-second elevator pitch on Backup Assist and just let people know where they can find out more about the product?
Okay, great. So the URL is backupassist.com. We do have a blog there with a lot of educational material. So if you want to read more about topics that I've talked about, definitely go to our blog. And really, Backup Assist specializes in delivering the best backup and disaster recovery protection for SMEs on a limited budget. And before that, you get local backups, cloud backups, as well as protecting against ransomware infecting and corrupting that backup.
Well, Linus, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time and also joining us so early. I know it's pretty much the crack of dawn where you are locally.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Alberto, and I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Awesome. We look forward to having you back.
Thanks for checking out this episode of The Noisecast. This is Alberto signing off. Just a quick reminder, you can find us on social media at Noisecast on Facebook and Twitter, and at The Noisecast on Instagram. You can be sure to check out our Patreon page and support if you can. A little bit goes a long way, so we appreciate you, supporting what we do. Thanks for listening. Peace.